So in eighth grade, I was in a speech class, and it was time for me to give my very first talk. And for whatever reason, I did not want to go. I can't remember if it was I didn't prepare or I was just nervous, but I do remember getting out of it. I told the teacher that I had a sore throat, and so she let me go another day. But for the rest of that semester, she always looked at me suspiciously. And so when my dad came to me on Thursday and said, I don't have a voice, he got out of speaking today, but I am looking at you suspiciously. So we are beginning a new series today called Against All Odds, and we love stories of people who do make it against all odds. Look at a few of these examples. Julianne Kopecki, she was the only survivor of a flight that was over the Peru rainforest after being struck by lightning. So the plane collapsed. Julianne fell thousands of feet. She fell 2 miles and strapped in her chair, but her fall was cushioned by the jungle canopy, and she survived with only a broken collarbone. And luckily, there was a stream nearby, and after following that stream for 9 days, she was rescued by loggers. Just incredible. Or Stephen Callahan, setting sail from the Canary Islands towards the Caribbean in a small sailboat. Stephen's boat sank in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and he was adrift on a small life raft for 76 days. He eventually landed in the Bahamas. And then lastly, Harrison Okini, a 29-year-old cook, he is the sole survivor of the Jackson 4, a ship that capsized off the coast of Nigeria. And so Harrison, he was trapped in the bathroom on the ship, which sunk 100 feet below the surface. But amazingly, there was a 4-square-foot air pocket, and he was able to remain alive for over 60 hours until South African divers found him. Harrison says, "All around me was just black and noisy. I was crying and calling on Jesus to rescue me. I prayed so hard. I was so hungry and thirsty and cold and was just praying to see some kind of light." The Guardian newspaper out of London reports that he has not been sailing since. Survival against all odds. And so we're going to be looking at the story of Daniel today. We're going to read through the entire first chapter of Daniel, and then we're going to pick out 3 applications for us. So Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. In the 3rd year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service. Among those who were chosen were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names: to Daniel, the name Belshazzar; to Hananiah, Shadrach; to Mishael, Meshach; and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, "I am afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kind. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them into his service, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. And so this is the beginning of the story of a remarkable man. And what I want to start with is this. That Daniel never expected to be in Babylon. And I want you to put yourself in Daniel's shoes. He was one of the best and brightest of Israel. And we know a fair picture of him because of verses 3 and 4. That he was a family of high social status. He was physically flawless. He was strikingly handsome. If my wife were doing this message, she would tell you to picture Jack Thornton from the show Wind Calls the Heart. Strikingly handsome. Daniel was bright. He was quick to understand. He was qualified to serve in the king's palace, which means he had a high level of emotional intelligence. He had people smarts. So he was devoted to God and to God's community, and he would have had all the dreams that young men like that have. Back in Judah, his future would have been predictable. The whole world was in front of him. He would go to a great school and then go on to have great success in whatever career he chose. He would have a great marriage, live in a big house on Lake Drive, raise a wonderful family, occupy a prominent place in the temple. He would do great things for God and God's people. But life didn't turn out as planned. There's a whole world of heartbreak in just the first two verses. It says Nebuchadnezzar came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The heartbreak is this, that God had made a promise to Abraham long ago, "I will be your God, your people will be my people, and I will give you a promised land, and I will make you a nation that will bless all people." And that promise had sustained them century after century. And they had a lot of ups and downs through the years. They were in slavery in Egypt. They were delivered under Moses. They wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. They went into the promised land. And after a period of time, they reached their peak with David and Solomon. Solomon built an amazing temple, but then there was this long and slow decline. And the kingdom was divided into the southern kingdom, Israel, which was destroyed, and all that was left was the northern kingdom called Judah. And then when Daniel was a young man, Nebuchadnezzar comes, and without much effort at all, it seems like God's dream is destroyed. The temple is a memory. The sacred contents are now in another pagan temple. Daniel would come to adulthood and spend his life in a foreign land. He would give his best service to a foreign king. He lost his culture. He lost the relationships that he cherished. He would have to learn a new language. He would live and die in a place he never wanted to be. He would never go home. He loses his name. And even that is quite significant. If you see this in verse 7, it says, "The chief official gave them new names to Daniel, the name Belshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. And in each one of their names, there's a part of either Elohim or Yahweh, which is God. Their names reminded them that they belonged to God. And the new name that Nebuchadnezzar gave each of them was a way of saying, I am your king now. Give yourself to me. Allow Babylon to define your identity. The name Daniel meant the Lord will judge. The Lord will be my judge. You see, throughout his whole life, Daniel heard his name spoken, and it was a reminder. God will set things right. The Lord will see that justice is done. His very name was a promise every time he heard it, every day of his life. But now he's not Daniel. Now he's Belshazzar, which means Bel's prince. Bel was a title for their demonic god, Marduk. The Lord now is not setting things right. It looks like the whole promise is shattered. So what do you do when you end up in Babylon? Because you will. Either on a personal level, Babylon will be when you find yourself where life does not turn out the way you had planned. Maybe it happens in a relationship or a marriage that you had such dreams for, and it ends. Maybe it's when your greatest career hope dies. Maybe it's when somebody you loved wounds you deeply. Maybe it's when you realize a prayer that you have cherished will not be answered the way you had hoped. On a higher level, Babylon is where all of us find ourselves, in a world that is changing fast, where the differences between now and 15 years ago are astonishing, and so much of the change seems like it's not in the right direction. On a personal level or on a broader level, be sure of this. You will find yourself in Babylon, cut off from the life that you wanted and planned on, and you may never get home. And worst of all, you may wonder if God even knows. How could God let this happen? How could the promise be forgotten? Does he notice? What do you do when you find yourself, like Daniel, in Babylon? There's a whole lot of study regarding people who experience suffering, major crisis, and trauma. And these studies find, as you would expect, that people are just devastated by difficult ordeals, and they are just withered in their spirit. But interestingly enough, there are other people who don't just survive traumatic events, they actually enlarge their capacity to handle big problems. They strengthen their spirit to endure, to be creative, to be tenacious, and in the end, they haven't just survived, they've grown. They've actually grown through the trauma. Researchers call these people resilient. It's resiliency, this capacity to thrive in challenging or difficult situations. And they find that there are common characteristics, qualities of their spirit, which mark a resilient person. And Daniel is one of the most resilient people in all of history. At the beginning of his life, we see Daniel has lost everything. Nebuchadnezzar besieged Jerusalem. Yet with God's help, Daniel not just survives, but thrives. And so I want us to walk through three different ways Daniel shows us how to be resilient right here in chapter 1. And the first thing is this, is that spiritually resilient people resolve to honor their deepest values. They refuse to live as the victim. They refuse to cross lines that would cause them to betray their deepest commitments. They resolve to honor their deepest values and to honor God. And in many ways, this story hinges on verse 8. And in some ways, the whole book does. Everything turns here because up until verse 8, it's the Babylonians who have determined everything. Up until this point, they are in the driver's seat. Up until this point, Nebuchadnezzar, he conquers Israel. He carries off the sacred objects. He determines to enroll them in leadership academy. He decides on the criteria. The school dean determines their names, their identity, and the menu. They will be fed rich food from the king's table. And the easiest thing in the world would have been Daniel to feel like he's just a victim to forces too big to overcome. But look at verse 8, because this is where his story shifts. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. This time, Daniel, he is deciding. Daniel, the captive. Daniel, the prisoner. Daniel makes a decision. He resolves in his heart he will honor God. He will not defile himself, and he just decides. And so now he's got to take action. He's got to talk to the dean of the school and talk about the menu. And he explains that everyone is being fed steak, eggs, cheese, kind of doing the Atkins diet. Daniel's more of like a Weight Watchers guy. The Bible tells us that Daniel, he's offered these rich foods, which would have been forbidden by the law of Moses and likely offered to idols. And it becomes clear to Daniel he needs to draw a line. He needed to take a stand. And you need to know how much courage this took on Daniel's part, because Nebuchadnezzar was not the type of leader that cut people a lot of slack. You've all heard of leaders who have kind of a hands-on style of management or a hands-off style of management. Well, Nebuchadnezzar, he had a heads-off type of management. If people crossed him, he cut off their head. Now, how many of you've had a really tough boss? Great. How many of you, when your boss terminated you or terminates someone, he actually terminates them? Well, this is exactly what happens with Nebuchadnezzar. But Daniel determines something. He remembers his name. Daniel does not view himself as a helpless victim. He resolves in his heart, and there's just this good old-fashioned courage and initiative, and there's a lot of wisdom. And spiritually resilient people, they are like that. They will find a way to honor God, and they'll figure out how to do it, whatever it takes. They do not accept as an excuse they live in forces too powerful for them to control. They seize whatever initiative is available to them. And so this is going to take effort on Daniel's part. He goes to the dean of the school. He makes his request. And this is how the dean replies. Verse 10. I am afraid of my lord, the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. And so that's his answer. And so here we get a little window into Daniel's smarts, because Daniel says to him, well, that's not exactly a yes, but it's not exactly a no. And so he goes to the guard, who is one step below in the organization chart, and he says, hey, let's try this. Let's try this diet for 10 days, and then you be the judge. And so this takes amazing courage and initiative. But God will work, and God does. Let's look at verse 15. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. And so the guard is so impressed with what Daniel and his friends look like, he takes everyone else's steak away, their wine, and replaces it with a veggie platter. And Daniel goes to the head of the class. But this only happens as it looks like everything was lost, that he was up against powerful forces. Daniel resolved in his heart to draw a line. He was wise, he chose his battles, but this was one place that he would not cross. And so let me ask you, are you close to crossing any important lines in your life? How many of you, you've been to the Grand Canyon? Can I just see a raise of hands? Okay. Grand Canyon, one of the wonders of the world. You must see it in person. It will take your breath away. That's not me. So after a recent trip to the Grand Canyon, we went through the gift shop, and I found this book called Over the Edge, Death in the Grand Canyon. I thought it might make a good Father's Day gift. The Grand Canyon is huge. It's about 200 miles from east to west, and so the most busy spots have railings and fences, but there's hundreds of miles of rim with absolutely no fence and thousands of feet sheer cliffs. And it's up to you how close you're going to get to that line, how good of a look you need to see down. And the book Over the Edge catalogs that roughly, on average, 20 people a year fall into the canyon. And they didn't intend to. But sometimes it's just, you know, let's have the really cool picture where it looks like I'm falling. Or you got to have the picture where you're just reflecting and dangling your feet over the edge. But in all these different cases, getting right up to that line or leaning in, and lives are lost over the edge. You and I, we would never purposely cross a line that would put our lives at risk, and yet many of us would be willing to look or lean into sin just to get a closer look. And there are so many people. Our world is filled with broken people who never intended to fall. They only wanted to get a closer look at some forbidden sin. So many people, they never intended to sabotage a marriage or a friendship. They just drift into resentment or revenge. They suffer a relational train wreck. Some of you this morning, you are seeing yourselves as the victim, pawns of circumstances beyond your control, decisions that other people have made, and there could be truth to that. And yet, God is calling you to be like Daniel, to make a resolution in your heart with courage and have wisdom to carry it out. This is required to bounce back in life. This is required for spiritual resiliency if you will thrive in Babylon. And let me tell you a secret, that all of us live in Babylon. We all live in a world that will tempt us or intimidate us into settling for less than God's best. And so what do you need to decide ahead of time? Where to draw that line? I find with Daniel, he made that decision. It says he resolved in his heart. He decided before the temptation even came that this is the line. And that's different for a lot of us because we like to wait until our options are presented. And then we'll make our decision. And so it's the little gal, and you know what? She sees a guy. He's not a believer, but guess what? He looks like Justin Timberlake. What am I going to do? Instead of deciding ahead of time, I resolve I will honor God. So what do you need to do to draw that line? Do you need to end a relationship that is dishonoring to God? Then draw that line and end it. But please do it gently and with some class and send a text. Do you need to repent of some ethical doings in your business? Set those right. Do you need to seek the kingdom of God first and reorder your schedule? Then do that today. Is there some area of your life where you need to pursue healing and Jesus is asking you, do you want to be well? And you resolve today, I will be healed. You must resolve this in your heart. And here's why this matters. In the future, Daniel and his friends are going to be presented with very difficult decisions. There's a point where they're going to be asked to bow down to a king or to be thrown into a furnace. And they are going to say, okay, throw us into the furnace because we're not bowing down. When Daniel, one day, he's told, stop praying to your God or you will be fed to a lion, Daniel says, throw me to the lions because I'm not stopping praying. And see, if Daniel and his friends had not drawn the line where they did, had they not declared to the world where their allegiance belonged, they would have never had the strength to face the furnace or the lion. Some of you are seeing how close you can get to the wrong thing, and you're feeling the pain of that right now. You can resolve this morning, I will honor God. And here's where I draw the line. The second thing we see in Daniel's life, spiritually resilient people, they are committed to living in community. They recognize that this is a life or death matter. And Daniel, he found this group of friends he formed with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And we see these friends come up over and over again. They would go to school together. They would study together, pray together. They faced decisions together. One day they would face the furnace together. One day they would rule together. And so this small group of believers, they would change the nation. So when you and I, when we live in Babylon, we will not thrive outside of community. You just won't. And here's what's ironic to me, because there's many places in the world where the church has been driven underground, where to be a public follower of Christ is extremely risky. And so where community is difficult, people will move heaven and earth just to have a few moments together as the church. And yet here where community and connection is so available, sometimes we don't make the adequate time and effort for it. And the nationwide trend that everyone is seeing right now is that people who attended church 3 times a month are now attending 2x a month. Those who attended church 2x a month are now attending 1 time. And I love it when we all gather. This is the highlight. Hopefully you feel just the power and love when we come together as a church. And yet sometimes I get very concerned and actually a little sad, because I know if I see you today, I won't see you for another month or two. And it makes me wonder, how are you going to be able to develop people who will have your back? How are you going to create that band of brothers in your life with that level of investment? And so to have this in your life, that deep friendship or spiritual intimacy, that does not come easy. You have to fight for it. So many times I'll talk to someone going through just a hard, hard time, and I'll ask the question, who has your back? Who's praying for you? Who's supporting you right now? And so many times I get the answer, no one, really. You have to make time for it. Take a look around the room. Every person you see here today, in some way or another, is going through Babylon. Every person here, in one way or another, gets beaten up through the week. There are people in this room ready to give up. Maybe one is sitting next to you. Do you know how powerful it is when you take the time to say, hey, you know, tell me your name. Tell me what's going on in your life. Is there any way I can pray for you today? Let your life counts. Every week, it should be our goal as a church to not allow one person to leave this room without hearing from someone, you know what? You matter. I'm praying for you. Don't give up. You will not thrive in Babylon outside of community. And here's the last thing. Spiritually resilient people, they remember that their life has meaning and purpose in the eyes of God. Spiritually resilient people remember that their life, even and especially the times of suffering, has meaning and purpose in the eyes of God. And this is interesting to me. The factor that causes people to give up most often is not when life gets more intense. It's when they believe their suffering has no meaning or purpose. It's not the intensity of the suffering. It's the meaninglessness of it. Researchers who study this find that suicide notes rarely speak about failing health or rejection or finances or even physical pain. They say things like, there's no point in going on. There's no reason for me to keep living. See, Daniel was about to discover something in Babylon that he would have never known if he lived his whole life in Israel. He was going to discover that someone is at work in Babylon. Now, there's one character in this story besides Daniel and his friends and Nebuchadnezzar, and I want you to see if you can find his name. And so we're going to work this backwards. We're going to start in verse 17. I want you to see if you can find the hidden character. Verse 17. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. Now let's look at verse 9. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. And now verse 2. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. So let me ask you, who is the character that keeps getting mentioned over and over again? The writer of this story is convinced it is God at work from the very beginning to the end. He knows something that many of the Israelites do not know. He's convinced that the defeat of Judah and the loss of the temple, which looks so tragic, was not just a random, meaningless event. God was not asleep. God had not forgotten his promise or his dream. God was up to something in Babylon, in the place of great suffering. And God, as it turns out, he loves even Babylon. God even loves Nebuchadnezzar. God sees something in him. And so from the very beginning of the story to the end, Daniel believes in the sovereignty of God. Daniel sees God's hand in everything that happened. And God's sovereignty just means this: God is in control of who is in control. God's sovereignty means that in the scheme of things, there are no accidents. His plans will not be thwarted. He's never surprised or dumbfounded. There are no accidents. And at the end of the day, everything will work out for the good of those who love God. Amen. And so God, he's bigger than your Babylon. God is in control. He always has been. And he always will be. Please stand with me this morning. I believe the most powerful thing you could do this morning is to reaffirm your faith in the sovereignty of God and saying, God, despite what's going on in my life, the things that I like, the things I do not like, you are God. You are in control. There is meaning and purpose. And so we're going to sing a song talking about God is powerful, God is sovereign. You're invited to make that declaration right where you are at right now. You're also welcome to make that vow at this altar if you would like. But let's reaffirm our faith in the God who is in control.